Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, Making Life-Changing Decisions with Perfect Timing. Paul is a visionary entrepreneur who invented a new category of software in 1989 that evolved to become the world's largest astrology and divination website. He sold the company in 2007 and has since authored 3 books. He is a sought-after speaker, philanthropist, and founder of the Educational Divination Foundation, divination.com. In this book, it's a book about self-discovery and manifesting your true destiny. Paul distills a lifetime of business and personal adventures into an eloquently articulated process for making the best strategic decisions with ever-improving sense of timing. His true stories learned will intrigue and delight you, the reader, while presenting the skills required to make great decisions with perfect timing to captivate and motivate. Again, you can find out more about this book, as well as Paul's other books and lots of other information by visiting divination.com. Okay, with that, welcome, Paul.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Well, I am happy to speak with you. It was a year and a half ago that we spoke, but I love this particular topic because I think this is ever so relevant, you know, in today's world and becoming more so. So I guess we should probably start with, you know, the idea of intuitive intelligence. I think people can kind of recognize the individual components, you know, intuitive, the intuition and intelligence. But what are you talking about when you use the phrase of the two together?
Well, intuitive intelligence basically is the ability to access your intuition when you need it the most. And it's not as easy as that might sound. I consider it a higher form of intelligence. You know, we've defined different types of intelligence like IQ or emotional intelligence or social intelligence or even erotic intelligence. And I realized that this book, which is about decision making, in particular the strategic decisions that we make in our lives as an individual or as a business person, need to be driven by a higher consciousness. They need to be driven more by intuition than by logic, even though logic can help. So I consider intuition to be a higher form of intelligence because it transcends the linearity of logic, and it's of the heart and the soul in that it transcends the ego. So the ego is not really good at making these big visionary decisions. That's where intuition comes in.
Yeah. Now, and I understand the, you know, the idea of the strength, you know, the strengthening of the intuition, and and we were talking about the different types of intelligence. Is this intuitive intelligence something that can be developed? I mean, you mentioned, you know, that it's the, you know, kind of like a higher form of intelligence, but is it like the other forms of intelligence that can be taught?
Well, I think all of the forms of intelligence can be improved upon through learning, whether it's social or emotional or intellectual. And certainly the same thing is true of intuitive intelligence. But the intuition is not a sense. It's one of, they call it the sixth sense. But it's not a sense that you, there's no formula for accessing it. It's hard to access because the other five senses are so dominant, you know, particularly the visual sense, the auditory sense, the kinesthetic sense. These are very powerful channels for information that flood our system with information, and the intuition is a much more subtle sense that is tuning into a much finer frequency, and it gets drowned out. So it's very difficult to access it, especially when you need it the most. And what do I mean by when you need it the most? Well, I'm assuming that you need it the most when you've got a big decision to make, and that's generally accompanied by stress or anxiety, fear or craving, some strong emotion. And the strong emotions are one of the things that gets in the way of the intuition being able to manifest itself, along with all the distractions, which I mentioned. And then or addictions, you know. These are things that keep people from opening up to intuitive intelligence. So you really got to create space for it by tuning down the noise in the system. And we are overwhelmed. We're being bombarded with information on all fronts, through all the senses, and there's all these channels of information coming at us all the time now. It's amazing how much information we have to deal with, and half of it is completely bad. So it's pretty hard. It takes an intuition to discern the good information from the bad information. But there's all of this noise in the system. And then we have a mind that's chattering away internally all the time, and that gets in the way too. So meditation can help. Things that help reduce the noise in the system and help us to calm down are going to help us get in touch with intuitive insights that we could really use. You know, I have this thing. Yeah, I call it O'Brien's Law. It says the stronger the feeling, the less trustworthy it is as a basis for decision making. And most people are kind of taken aback at that because you think, well, you got to trust your feelings, and it's a strong feeling. I got to go with my strongest feelings. And I say, no. Intuition never takes the form of a really strong feeling. It's kind of a subtle sense. And so cultivating your awareness of that is a discipline, but it's not a formula that you can just assert yourself towards. It's more of a letting go of the noise process.
Well, you know, that's a subtle distinction that I had not really ever considered. Now, when it comes time to, you know, these decision making, you know, you're talking about, you know, using the intuitive intelligence and not so the emotions. I mean, you know, because a lot of people would assume that when you talk about following your intuition, that your emotions are an expression of your intuition, and that you would be, you know, following what they would. I mean, that's what you're saying not to. I mean, that's like O'Brien's Law, no, right?
Well, you know, we give, I mean, emotions are important, and they pack a lot of information, but generally they are the product of the ego, not of the heart. And so, you know, basically, if you have a strong feeling of fear or you have a strong feeling of craving, this is going to lead to an impulsive decision that's not necessarily going to be good. In fact, it could have many unintended consequences. So that's one of the ways we go wrong with decision making. This is really a book about decision making. I call my approach the visionary decision making process. And it basically involves logic, but it's primarily driven by the intuitive sense. And the reason it's so important and so hard is decision-making is the highest leverage human activity that there is. The quality of your success and happiness in life is more related to the quality of the decisions you make than any other factor. And yet you'd think, as the only species that can visualize different possible outcomes for different choices we might make, that we would be really good at this by now. But au contraire, we really suck at it. We're either too emotional and impulsive, or we're too rational and we're waiting for more information and we miss windows of opportunity. So there's a sweet spot when we can kind of let go of overthinking and overfeeling and just sort of like sit with it and sleep on it and let it percolate within us and get in touch with what does our heart want? You know, what instead of, you know, the ego-driven decisions that are good for a lot of things, but they're not really good for the big strategic life-changing types of decisions.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, that was the one thing that I kind of wanted to, you know, highlight it, that it was for those, that type of decisions, because we make decisions every day, you know, and so many of them are involuntary, you know, so there's a, you know, that whole level of decision making, but we're talking about, you know, conscious choices and decisions, and then you're talking about those that are really of a strategic significance, those are real important ones.
Mm-hmm. The life-changing ones. And I use my personal story as an example throughout the book because it's I can hardly believe it myself when I think back on how the hell did I do that? It's like and so I wrote a book to try to explain how I did that because people would ask me about it and say, you really need to write that story. But I was a marketing executive in the high-tech industry. But I was in love. I had a reverence for the Chinese philosophy, particularly Taoism, particularly a book called the I Ching, or the I Ching, in English means the Book of Changes. And I had discovered that when I was in college at Berkeley, and I was fascinated by it. And I used it my entire adult life to just give me another point of information around decision making. And I didn't fully realize that what I was doing was I was stimulating my intuition and that this divination system known as the I Ching, and that's what it was actually designed to do. And a lot of people dismiss it as a fortune-telling thing or some superstitious thing, but really it's a very skillful way to think outside the box around problems that logic can't handle. It basically just stimulates your intuition and you read between the lines, and it really helped me a lot in my adult life. And I was fascinated by it, and I was fascinated by software, too. I was fascinated by the promise of multimedia software in particular. I could visualize how in the future we were going to – well, this is back in the 70s and 80s, but I could visualize how in the future we might be able to use sound and music and art in order to create a ritual space. You know, we didn't have very complicated games back in the 70s. You know, we had Pong and we had – you know, things like that were very primitive, but we didn't have multimedia software, really. And I was having visions of multimedia software, you know, 20 years before CD-ROMs existed. And I thought, wow, someday somebody's going to use this ability to write code to deliver an experience way beyond Pong or any primitive game like that. And I thought, this could be used for good. This could be used for educational or even spiritual purposes. So when I was an executive, I was a VP of marketing for a high-tech company in the late 80s. We were a Macintosh software company. We were like one of the early ones, and Apple was funding a lot of the stuff that we did. And I was traveling around the world, you know, showing off data communication software for Macintosh computers, which is kind of sterile, high-tech type of stuff. My heart wasn't really in it, but I was making a lot of money, and you know, there was nothing wrong with it. So... But I had, you know, it was so stressful working for this company. It was very dysfunctional, lots of office politics. And I found myself using the I Ching more often than usual. And then I was actually bringing it to work, which was really bizarre. I mean, this is a company full of engineers. I had to find a very discreet place to cast the coins and generate a reading in this high-tech environment. And then I had a light bulb go off and go, geez, I sure wish I could do this on my computer. And there we were with Macintoshes, very primitive ones, you know, the ones, the early ones that looked like an ice cube, you know, they were the shape of a box.
I remember them.
And, but they were a graphical interface. And I thought, wow, this could be programmed to have art and sound. So I decided to throw caution to the wind. And I ended up using my entire life savings to create a prototype of the first divination software, which was this interactive I Ching program, where you could use the mouse and the keyboard to cast the hexagram, and then it would look it up. And then, of course, that forced me to have to write my own version of the I Ching, which I've rewritten many times over the last 30 years. And actually, it just got published in Mandarin by a huge publishing company in Beijing. So they really liked it. But and then we have an app called the Visionary I Ching app. So that's one of my books, is the Visionary I Ching. But in any case, that's how I became an entrepreneur. I created this thing just out of love, and everybody. And then I quit my job. I kept on as a marketing consultant to that company for a couple of years just so I had some income, because I didn't have any family money. I didn't have any investors, and it was just, if I'd have gone on Shark Tank with this idea, they would have eaten me alive. It was like the dumbest. It was the dumbest business idea ever. I mean, in 1988, nobody who knew what the I Ching was bought software or even used computers, and people who bought software were engineers and accountants. And so it was just like the worst product idea ever. But I loved it so much, and I thought, well, if I can market it in a clever enough way, I might be able to make a living, and so that's how I became an entrepreneur. It was just a foolhardy thing, I guess. And for the next 13 years, I struggled to just keep things together and keep a roof over my head. And I was a single father. It was not easy. But I added tarot cards, do-it-yourself tarot card readings, and CD-ROMs came along, and I put everything on CD-ROM. And then the internet, the World Wide Web came along, and I put it on the World Wide Web. And then I added astrology, and then I got the franchise for AOL horoscopes and Yahoo horoscopes. And before all was said and done, in the mid 2000s, my company was being pursued by media giants like Disney came to look at us, and Barnes and Noble wanted to possibly purchase us because we had gotten to a point where we had 10 million. Registered members, and we got it up to 10 million in sales, and I thought, oh my God, we're being pursued, and I never made any money until
that wasn't in the plane.
No, I was just trying to make a living. I was just trying to get by doing something I thought was cool, and it ended up the money came anyway. So it's a kind of a really interesting story because I had no exit strategy or expectations of wealth, but that's kind of the way it came down.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, in the beauty of that story is that, you know, there first of all, there were so many times that it probably would have been so much easier to say, you know, forget this, let me, you know, do, you know, something steady. And I know that as you kind of go through, I kind of went through the same kind of things that it's like, okay, you know, if I had known then what I know now, would I have done that? You know?
Right.
And,
exactly.
And what I found out in talking to a lot of people is that, first of all, is that if they had that foreknowledge, then they probably wouldn't have done what it is, you know,
exactly.
that the journey was to take them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's not easy to let your intuition or your heart lead the way like that. But it was kind of organic for me because I was genuinely fascinated by the I Ching.
Right.
And I was genuinely fascinated by my visions of multimedia software. And the intersection of those two fascinations inspired me so much, I figured, I got to do this. You know, I never even questioned it. I just kind of and so the manifestation process began. And I knew about the laws of manifestation. And in fact, on my website, divination.com, I share some resources there, including a manifestation meditation process that I had used, and I had support from a mastermind group because nobody knew. Everybody thought I was crazy. All my peers thought I was, you know, I had lost my mind. And I needed to believe in what I was doing, and that it was the right thing for me.
Now, one of your, you know, some of the topics covered in your book that I want to get before we get to the close of the show, we're kind of about halfway through, is first of all, you talk about perfect timing. So I want to talk about what is perfect timing. And then one of the things you also talk about is the in the title of the book, making life changing decisions with perfect timing. I want to kind of get into exactly what that perfect timing is. And then what feeds into that is, in the book, you also talk about synchronicity, archetypes, and how to kind of leverage those. Because I love talking about synchronicity, but I've never really thought about the idea of leveraging that experience. So I really kind of want to explore that. Okay?
Sure.
So why don't we go ahead and take a break right now. And I do want to invite listeners, if you want to call in and ask Paul any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to pose them. And then we'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Paul O'Brien, and we are talking about his new book, Intuitive Intelligence: Make Life-Changing Decisions with Perfect Timing. Again, you can find out more about this book as well as his other books by visiting the website divination.com. Okay, so with that, we're back, Paul.
Yes, we are.
Okay, so go ahead.
You wanted to talk about perfect timing.
Yes.
And
so,
I have something to
yes,
say
let's
about
talk about that. Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, the timing question is there's two questions in a strategic decision. There's the what question, which is what is the best next move I could make or could make, and there's the when question, and when should I make it?
Right.
So, you know, like, when should I have that heart-to-heart talk, or when should I talk to the boss, or when should I do this or that? That question, the when question, is the timing question, and that is entirely, almost 100% intuitive. You can bring logic to bear on the what question, because logic can rule out a lot of impossibilities and help you narrow down your options. But the timing question is intuitive. So if you improve your intuitive intelligence, your timing is going to automatically improve. Now, perfect timing is defined by the word synchronicity, which you brought up earlier. And synchronicity is a term that Carl Jung, the great depth psychologist. And I have a whole chapter on it in the book in the beginning where I discuss synchronicity and archetypes, which were two of the really interesting esoteric concepts of Carl Jung. And synchronicity is the definition of perfect timing. Synchronicity basically boils down to the idea that everything is related in time, not just in space. And now in science, in Western science, we don't acknowledge this. We say if you do the experiment on Tuesday night and you do that same controlled experiment on Sunday morning, you should get exactly the same result. That's because they don't take timing into account. They're just trying to take things apart, figure out what things are made of or whatever. But timing is very important, and the ancient sages knew this, and it's particularly relevant when it comes to relationships or relating, negotiating strategies, etc. These are all intuitive things where timing comes to play. Well, synchronicity just means that everything's related in time. Now, one colloquial way of saying that is there are no accidents. And Carl mm-hmm. Jung defines synchronicity as a meaningful coincidence. So we have coincidences happen all the time. Are they always synchronicities? Well, I could argue yes, they always are synchronicities, even though we don't necessarily see them as meaningful. So you were asking, how do we leverage synchronicity? Well, one of the ways we leverage synchronicity is becoming more attuned to the possible meanings of things and giving more credence to the idea that an amazing coincidence means something and actually is a signal for us to do something or to change directions or to have a new insight into something. So we start looking for these things. We start paying attention. And then when we notice them, we can say, oh, that means something. I don't know what it means just yet. Maybe I will know what it means at some point, but that means something. Let's let that impact our consciousness and leverage it as a signal or as a sign and omen, as they put it in the Old Testament of the Bible. So leveraging synchronicity, one way you can do it is just by paying attention and giving some credence to the idea that it means something. But another active way you can do it is through a divination system like the I Ching or maybe tarot cards for people who prefer that set of archetypes. And what's happening in when you do a reading like that, like I used to do with, and still do with the I Ching, whether I'm using my app or whether I'm using coins, what I'm doing is I'm creating a meaningful coincidence. What is the coincidence? It's the way the coins land relative to whatever I was contemplating when I cast the coins. So you're supposed to concentrate on some issue or dilemma and just become single-minded about it and then cast the coins. Same thing with tarot cards. You're supposed to be contemplating whatever issue or dilemma that's on your mind while you're shuffling mm-hmm. the cards and you lay them out and you pick the cards. And so, you know, there are no accidents. The card that you get is one of 78 right. archetypes. And each tarot card is an archetype. And each I Ching chapter, there's 64 of them, is an archetype. So archetypes are defined as energetic patterns that are inside of you. And they're inside of everybody. They're inside of what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. They show up in our dreams. You know, you have archetypes like the king or the sovereign or the warrior or the lover or the magician. These are different aspects of our being, and we all have all of them in there. And so when you draw a card from a tarot deck, for instance, that card is representing a part of you. And why did that card came up? Well, that's the coincidence. You were thinking about XYZ, and that card came up. That's the coincidence. What does it mean? So you interpret the card relative to what you were thinking about, and maybe you get a new thought. Maybe you get a new idea. Maybe you get some inspiration from outside the box. So that's a way that you can leverage synchronicity, because the synchronicity was the coincidence of that card coming up while you were thinking about XYZ.
I have multiple decks of cards myself, so I've had many occasions the right message come out, you know, when the cards are that I've learned something from the cards pulled for what I was looking into. Now, one of the things you talked about, improving one's timing. First of all, let me just say that, you know, when you talked about using the divination as a way of creating the opportunity for that coincidence, you know, and that connection to happen, to me that is, you know, for people out there who are looking for ways to strengthen that synchronistic aspect of life, then that's a great way to create opportunities And once you do, then you'll start, I think, seeing more. I mean, at least for me, that's how it happened. Isn't that what your experience has been, or what do you think about
that? Yeah. I mean, when you when you use the I Ching and you get a hexagram, like the first one that I got, when I ever did it the very first time, I was actually a smart aleck 19-year-old kid, and I was making fun of it. And I got hexagram number 4, which is entitled Youthful Folly, and it describes a student who lacks respect for the teacher. I thought, wait, what? What's this? It ignored my question, and it gave me this this reflection. So I said, let me try that again, and this time I was testing it. And it came back with text that said, questioning the sincerity of the seeker. I mean, they're much longer. Chapters in the I Ching are much longer than that, but I'm giving you the essence of it. And I thought, whoa, now I'm testing it. My motivation was different. I wasn't making fun of it. I was testing it. And it came back, and it's testing me. So that's when I realized, you know, and it was and my intuition realized that, wow, that's how it works. It's reflecting my energy. So that when you interpret the cards, like you have card decks or you use the I Ching, you interpret the hexagram, that is your intuition being exercised because you have to read between the lines. These archetypes are not going to say, okay, now you've got to, you know, call so-and-so and then you've got to turn left and you've got to, you know, there's no, it's not telling you exactly what to do and it's not predicting the future. It's basically reflecting your situation and giving you some advice and some insight into the energy of that situation, and then you figure out what to do using your intuition, because you have to use your intuition in order to make sense of it. So that's how your intuition gets better. And the better your intuition gets, the more in touch with when it's going to be the right time to do something. Now, when I want to do something that feels risky to me, I almost always consult the I Ching. Why not? You know, I'm going to get an input from it, and then I'm going to interpret that input, and I'm going to either, you know, there's always one of three things to do. Either, you know, assert yourself and make it happen, fix it now, or do nothing and wait for the right time, or retreat, sometimes run like hell. So, and we don't credit that in the Western society.
Right.
We're so type A that we're always trying to make it happen. We're always trying to fix it. We're always trying to, make it be the way we want it right now. We're in a hurry for results, and we're not willing to wait when the time is right for waiting, and we're not willing to retreat. You know, we don't even understand. That feels like weakness to us, but actually, it can be the most skillful thing to do. So the I Ching will give you, some advice. You know, it's much more nuanced than that, but it'll tell you to do one of those three things essentially, and so that can help with your timing too. But it's all based on your interpretation of it, and that's where intuition comes in. So I'm just saying, timing is an intuitive question, and if there's no way to practice timing other than to exercise your intuition.
No.
And if your intuition gets better, your timing's going to get better automatically.
Right. And see, when it comes to timing, like you said, it might not be immediate. It may be in the future. And the perfect timing may not be at all, you know, that it might be something different, you know, that something has to happen or some kind of shift in your idea or, you know, like maybe you're thinking of relocating, you know, timing, you know, to one particular area, and then all of a sudden something comes up totally out of the blue. So, I mean, when it comes to perfect timing isn't always an immediate thing, you know.
It has everything. I think you're right. Mm-hmm. I think synchronicity is an awareness. Or being aware of synchronicities helps you understand that perfect timing is being in sync with who you are, with your values, and what motivates you to learn and grow. So all of this is based on self-knowledge and self-discovery, and knowing who you are and knowing what you want, having a vision, and defining success for yourself. There's a lot of homework. there's a lot of homework that goes into making great decisions. You can't just make great decisions if you don't know who you are and what you want and what you're good at and what you love to do. So there are chapters in the book on this, how to define success for yourself, how to answer the who am I question, which is the self-discovery question. You know, what fascinates you? Or what fascinated you when you were a student? You know, these kinds of things really help us make better decisions. And then the first thing, and then, you know, what is your vision? What do you want? What are you trying to manifest? So these are very, very important things to know. There's no point trying to have perfect timing if you're not in alignment with who you are.
Yeah. Well, you know, and, you know, when it comes time for, you know, you're talking about the decision making, great decisions, you know, great as far as a value to decision making. I mean, sometimes a great decision is in something in hindsight, you know, like you may have to go through a particular struggle for a period, you know, after you make a decision, go through a struggle, but then only after the struggle do you realize it was a great decision.
Oh,
but during that process, sometimes during that process, it doesn't seem like it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, of course. Sometimes a great decision is simply waiting for the right time or letting go of some obsession. You know, it's not always about getting something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about timing. You know, it's about timing is a big part of it. It's not great if it's not at the right time. I mean, it's all defined. My expression is making the right moves at the right time. That's what this book is about. How to make the right moves at the right time for you. I'm not assuming what success means to you. I'm not assuming what you want or what's good for you. You have to figure that out. And I give you some help.
Well, you know, and that's it's that personal connection that's critical. I mean, when it comes to a synchronistic event, I mean, it's that personal awareness that you get at that moment. You know, so it's that personal aspect. You know, so that it really does need to be very much. You have to be very aware of what it is. That, you know, as far as your true essence, I guess, of who you are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
One of the things that you talked earlier about a visionary approach, and I believe in the book you talk about visionary beliefs, adopting visionary beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
What makes beliefs visionary? What kind of sets them apart? What is a visionary belief?
Well, you know, I have a chapter called Belief Engineering, and that's in the third part of the book. That's kind of the philosophical part of the book, and I talk about how important beliefs are and how unimportant they can be. And so I define beliefs as current operating assumptions. In other words, I don't think beliefs are sacred. I don't believe that you're saved based on your beliefs or your faith. You know, usually faith means that you believe it's what you believe in. I think, you know, faith means, you know, confidence and believing in yourself. Faith can mean a lot of things, but generally it's about beliefs.
Right.
And there are religions on earth that say all you got to do is believe the right things and you're going to be saved. And I don't buy that. I think you have to be willing to upgrade your beliefs. And so I get into a whole discussion of how can you take ownership of your own beliefs. And you can't really do that if you don't let yourself test them, if you don't allow yourself to review them and to test them for usefulness and ultimately upgrade them. Now, there's a lot of the religions that are belief-centric are telling you, oh, no, you can't even doubt your beliefs for a second. That's the devil tempting you. You know, that's a closed system. I think changing your beliefs is what is the definition of learning. And so I think that we need to be willing to change our mind, and we do that by testing our beliefs and seeing if we really own them ourselves or did we just adopt them when we were 5 years old. and then we stuck to them like, you know, it's a tribal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really, if we want to, you know, if we want to grow and expand in who we are and what we can do and what we can manifest in our lives, we have to be willing to upgrade our beliefs, just like we upgrade the apps on our smartphone. That's called learning. So I think it's very important. Beliefs are important because they are operating assumptions. If I don't believe I can get out of this chair and mm-hmm. walk across the room, guess what? I won't be able to do it. You know,
right.
Beliefs are very, very useful. So then visionary beliefs are beliefs that you might want to try out. You know, it's, in other words, they're creative
mm-hmm.
They're creative ideas that you might want to try out as a belief. Like, for instance, the belief that change is your friend, the belief that everything happens for a reason. Well, I can't prove that, but I like
right.
believing
all
it
right.
because it actually gives me a sense of a certain sense of security. It makes the universe seem like a more reasonable place. And if everything happens for a reason, it's not, you know, maybe I don't know what the reason is, but it's a nice assumption to make. So it's an operating assumption that you can try. So I have a list of those in the book, which I call visionary beliefs, that are just beliefs for you to try out. So I'm trying to get people to loosen up about their belief system and do some experimenting.
Well, that's good. That is so good because, you know, like you said, some of those systems are really ingrained. Like, you know, if you got that, you're operating on one of those beliefs was, you know, obtained at year 5 and you're 60, you know, it's like that tape has been playing a long time.
Exactly.
But,
and it's limited.
A lot of times, yeah, and those kinds of things really do take shaking up. So, gosh, we're down to the end of the show, Paul. So what is it that you hope that people are going to be able to get from reading Intuitive Intelligence? And I understand that you have different types of ways for people to help improve their intuitive intelligence.
Yeah, there's a lot of the whole second part of the book is the how-to part and how to improve your access to intuitive intelligence. But I think really what I want to be, what I hope that people can take from the book, is actually a form of faith, more faith in themselves, you know, more self-knowledge and more awareness of that the fact that what they want, what they desire, is actually good for them. And to do some soul searching, you know, maybe they made some decisions when they were in college to become a lawyer because their father wanted them to be a lawyer, but maybe there's something else that they are really called to do because there was something else that was more naturally fascinating
mm-hmm.
for them. So I'm just trying to help people, whether it's a midlife crisis or whether they're in their 20s, I'm just trying to help people, you know, take hold of their lives. And basically, my slogan is take the risks that grow you. So don't be afraid to take a risk if it's going to grow you. And it's going to grow you if it's about something that's naturally fascinating and interesting to you, that speaks to your heart, not just your ego. It's not just a survival thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's great, Paul. Now, I noticed that you're on Facebook, and so I've liked your page there, so I can follow your work there. So for those listeners who use the Facebook platform, feel free to join Paul there. Well, Paul, I really want to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed speaking with you again.
Me too, Robert. It's been great. Thank you very much. And I would say that divination.com,
oh.
divination.com is probably the best way to get a hold of me. Probably the best way to get a hold of me is to contact me. All right. Thank you very much.
Great. So, everyone, again, today my very special guest has been Paul O'Brien, and we have been talking about his new book, Intuitive Intelligence, Make Life-Changing Decisions with Perfect Timing. Again, as Paul said, you can find out more by visiting divination.com. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ByteRadioMe. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.